This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And bringing you now Old Sneezy of the Seven Dwarfs, Dr. History. No, I got to turn your mic on. You scared me so bad, I forgot to turn your mic on this
well, maybe
morning.
Maybe they didn't hear me sneeze.
You should have seen that, folks. I mean, the guy sneezes and the headsets went 25 feet up
My
in the air.
My glasses fell off. I mean,
it was a wreck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice 22 degrees out there, Zeb.
There is no such thing as nice 22. You know what? I'm looking forward. In about 8 days, they're calling for 50.
Oh, that sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What do we got?
Okay, I'm going to talk.
Oh, did Schnitzel Flooster?
No, I haven't heard from him for a few
probably
weeks.
Probably got mad at me.
Yeah, well, probably.
Yeah.
Making fun of him.
There you go.
So, going to talk about a guy, and maybe you've heard of this guy, James Beckworth.
I have. He was a Negro guide.
Yes. Yeah. So James Beckworth, there are a lot of examples of African Americans who left their mark in history despite they had some pretty rough obstacles. But however, their stories are often not told or represented either during their lifetime or even afterwards. And one of those most famous nationwide during his life and after is this James P. Beckworth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Jim Beckworth was a fur trapper, explorer, mountain man, innkeeper, author, storyteller, scout, guide, and even more. It's sometimes hard to get a clear picture of the specifics of his life. Even when he was alive in the early decades of the 19th century, he was considered, like a lot of those guys, a teller of tall tales.
In other words, they elaborated a tad on the truth.
He was known to his fellow trappers and mountain men as, quote, yarn spinner and avid storyteller.
I love that.
I like the way they
yarn spinner
and storyteller.
There you go.
So it can be hard to determine how accurate his memoirs are, but even if a part of this is true, even half or three-fourths, it's still a pretty impressive story.
Well, it's impressive if he even made it up.
Yeah. So anyway, James Beckworth was still one of the most influential and impressive mountain men of the early days of the American West, especially given his origins. James Pearson Beckworth was born into slavery in Virginia in 1798.
Wow.
His mother was a slave, and his father was his family's white owner, who acknowledged him as his son.
Wait a minute. You lost me.
Okay, so his mother was a slave.
Mother was a slave, but his dad was white.
His dad was the owner, the slave owner.
Oh.
Okay. So James was, from an African-American mother
okay.
and a white father.
And so what then?
Well, he just acknowledged him as his son. He didn't ignore him. The white slave owner.
How could the wife be a slave if she was married to the slave owner?
Okay, that wasn't his wife.
Okay.
Okay. She was a slave.
I got you now.
Okay. Okay. I don't want to confuse you.
You did.
All right. Thank you. So he never let that interfere with his life. I mean, even though that was a rough beginning.
Carry on, Sergeant.
So there's a guy named Edward Wallace, and a lot of this I'm going to take from him.
Okay.
This Edward Wallace was a historical reenactor from New Mexico who has been giving educational performances and presentations as Jim Beckwith for the last 12 years. You know how they do reenactments.
Yeah.
So this guy is pretending or acting as James Beckwith.
Okay.
So he's done a lot of research, so I feel like a lot of the information I've got here is pretty accurate.
All right.
So when Wallace first began his work as a reenactor, he wanted to represent an individual that children of his community could look up to, and he chose James or Jim Beckwith because of the research.
Absolutely.
So Jim Beckwith was definitely a role model, this Wallace guy said. He overcomes such adversity in his life and is an example of possibilities. He's proof that there's nothing we can't do with our lives, no matter what our background, no matter our circumstances. He should be a role model for the black community.
There you go.
So anyway, I'm really impressed with this guy. So this Edward Wallace, he tells of Beckwith's different accomplishments, the reasons the trapper should be remembered and recognized because of all the things he did. So again, from his origins, he was a slave. Jim Beckwith rose to become one of the most prominent figures in the American West during his lifetime. Now, he was actually freed by his father. Because he was a slave,
yeah,
and he was freed by his father, and pretty soon he fell in with William Henry Ashley, and a fur trapping company founded by him.
I see.
The Ashley Fur Company.
So the dad freed his son
exactly
from being a slave.
Yes. Okay.
I've You're said still enough. With me. I've said enough.
This group, the Ashley Company, was composed of about 100 trappers and mountain men, including people you know, William and Milton Sublet, Hugh Glass, the guy that got mauled by the bear.
The tough guy.
Thomas Fitzpatrick, Jim Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
The company would later become well-known under the new name, the Rocky Mountain Fur Company.
There you go.
Yeah.
You've had stories on them.
Yeah. The Rocky Mountain Fur Company, all through, you know, Montana, Wyoming, even down into Idaho.
Yep.
So anyway, Jim Beckwith stayed with the Rocky Mountain Fur Company for many years. He traveled right through what is now Montana, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, and it doesn't say here, but I'm pretty sure they got down into the Idaho area, Island Park, and into that area,
okay,
I believe. So, according to his own accounts, Beckwith distinguished himself early on through good relations with the Native Americans, from whom he learned their methods of hunting, fishing, tracking, trapping, all the things that you could learn as you were around the
Native. So he came out west in what year?
Oh, gosh. Well, he was born in, 1798, so early 1800s, 1820s maybe,
okay,
somewhere right in there.
And he didn't know a thing.
Well, you know, he had to have had some knowledge about survival, don't you think?
Well, I would hope.
To be able to join with the Rocky Mountain Fur Company.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't just take on anybody. So, anyway, his relationship with the Native Americans grew deeper as time went on. Around the mid-1820s, Beckwith somehow fell in with the Crow Indian Nation.
Really?
He married a Crow woman and lived among the Crow for several years. He trapped with them. He traded the furs to white traders. So he actually trapped and lived with the different tribes of the Crow Nation.
Hmm.
So now in the mid-1830s, Beckwith left the Crow Band permanently. His reason is unclear. The reason given in his memoirs is a desire to return to, quote, civilization, and that he was getting tired of warfare.
Well, what about his wife?
She went with him.
Oh.
Yeah. So this decade-long stay with the Crow Nation was not the end of Beckwith's adventures in the West, not even close. After a brief stint in the Army, during which he served in the Seminole Wars, he returned to the Rocky Mountains, now as an independent trapper, trader, and guide. And, you know, a lot of those guys did that. They would be with the company for a while, but a lot of times they found that they could do better just on their own.
On their own.
Yeah. So a lot of them did that. Then they'd go to the rendezvous, of course,
yeah.
And sell their furs and get restocked up for the next year. But it was during this time that he became one of the most noteworthy mountain men of the era, and he was present for and even participated in a lot of the landmark events in the history of the American West. So this Edward Wallace, the guy that's the reenactor and historian, he said, quote, he founded El Pueblo, which I should have looked that up. It must be a town or something.
Well, yeah.
He owned the most prestigious hotel in Santa Fe.
Really?
He was out west in California during the Revolution and the Gold Rush. He trapped with Kit Carson and Jim Bridger. He lived such a fascinating life to come from where he was, being born a slave. I mean, look at all that he's done so far. Anyway, Beckworth
must have had a little money.
Well, he must have done. I mean, while he was living with the Crow Indians and,
yeah.
Trapping, he had to have gotten a pretty good start financially.
Yeah.
So he worked at both Fort Vasquez and El Pueblo. He blazed trails across both the Rockies and the Sierra Nevadas for the people heading west. He was present for what they call the Bear Flag Revolt, which was the California Republic or revolt that took place there. And again, I should have looked up more information about that.
I'm lost on that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to check that. But he was part of the Mexican-American War and then the California Gold Rush.
When you say Bear Flag Revolt, though, isn't there a bear on the state flag of California?
Yes. I should have checked that out more. But I believe that's when the California, they revolted against being America.
Yeah.
So, sorry, folks. Anyway, he was an Army scout with Colonel Shivington's campaigns against Native Americans in the Colorado Territory, and was a witness to what they call the Sand Creek Massacre, which was a horrendous massacre that took place against an Indian tribe. Anyway, throughout his life, Beckworth maintained friendships across the nation in the trading posts of Colorado, the Crow villages all along the Rocky Mountains, the gold fields of California, and the cities of St. Louis and Santa Fe. And these friends came from all walks of life and races in North America.
So they knew him all over the West.
They did. In the big cities, in the gold fields, the Crow Indian villages. Yeah, he was just, so he had to do a lot of traveling, you know. But though, you know, through his skill, his capabilities, and according to this guy, personal charisma, Beckworth overcame the boundaries in his way and became highly respected, not only among his fellow trappers, but even beyond. And to be, you know, in some of these bigger cities like Santa Fe and St. Louis and be highly thought of, I mean, that tells a lot
and
about it.
That would put us about, what, the 1830s or
40s? Yeah, 1840s, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But later on in life, he was widely known in stories about the frontier, a lot like Kit Carson and Hugh Glass, and he was sought out by both the Army and westward settlers as a guide and a scout. However, not long after his death in 1866, the perception of Beckworth began to kind of shift, and by this point, his memoirs had been widely read for a decade, and they quickly came under attack by historians of the time.
So he died at a relatively early age of 68.
Right, 1866, yeah.
Yeah,
about 18, yeah about 68.
68 years old.
So by the 1870s, less than 10 years after his death, historians were calling his memoirs, quote, little more than campfire stories, and using his reputation for exaggeration to dismiss not only his claims, but even what he had achieved.
Really?
So they were dismissing this guy, you know? Well, by the time the, quote, Wild West became cemented in the minds of American population, Beckworth had kind of faded from view in favor of other, and I hate to use this term, but whiter, according to this guy, whiter heroes with equally outlandish tales.
So the ridiculous racism was way back then.
Yeah. So people like Hugh Glass, who fought a grizzly bear and came back from the dead, Buffalo Bill Cody, who killed 5,000 bison in 1 year, Davy Crockett, who died fighting at the Alamo and took 16 Mexican soldiers with him, despite eyewitness accounts to the contrary.
Yeah.
But these guys caught the attention because, like I say, I hate to use the term, but they were white heroes, so to speak. Shame. You know, yeah, it is a shame. So luckily there's people like this Edwards guy that, you know, is bringing this back to the forefront.
When did he start being the spokesman for Jim Beckwith?
You know, I don't know that. But he's modern
but
day.
But did he study the man and go in and really dig into the man's history?
Yes, he researched him, found out what he did, all he'd accomplished, the great things that he had done as a trapper, a hunter, a scout, all these things. And again, he is reenacting as Jim Beckwith.
I wonder why society at that time tried to diminish him. What was the reason?
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea. But anyway, Beckwith's story, like those of so many other people of color, was sidelined and dismissed. And while it's true that some of the tales in his memoirs probably were exaggerated for entertainment value, there's still a core of truth to them, and there's no excuse for completely dismissing Beckwith's very real accomplishments.
Well, what happened to the wife?
You know, I don't really know that.
And what any children?
I don't know that either. The information I have doesn't mention only that he had married the Crow Indian woman. And so, but there had to be children.
Absolutely.
So, but he achieved as much, if not more, than his most famous white counterparts. And his contemporaries, the mountain men who traveled and worked with him, clearly greatly respected this guy. Again, because of the information that we have of what they said about him. But, you know, because of the combination of his race, his humble origins, and his reputation for tall tales, Beckwith's story was ignored or outright rejected, and the truth of it was almost entirely forgotten, especially among the general public. So Edward Wallace, this guy, here's what he says, quote, "The fact is that for a long time he was lost to history because of his color. In the 1950s, Hollywood made a movie called Broken Arrow, and Beckwith was one of the characters, but he was played by a white actor."
I remember that. Yeah. Movie was on TV here about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he was played by a white actor.
Isn't that something? Yeah. I can't wait to see that again.
Yeah, I'd like to, now that I've read this.
Yeah. So,
but the treatment of Beckwith's adventures and accomplishments, especially in contrast with the ways other mountain men of the time were recognized, is just one example of the contributions of the African Americans being kind of forgotten and ignored. You know, we talked about, let's see, was it Bill Pickett, the
steer wrestler, one of the greatest
cowboys, you know. But Edward Wallace said this. He said, quote, "People don't recognize the contribution." Oh, I said that. The contribution of blacks to the American West. There were blacks in every aspect of society throughout our history here.
There wouldn't have been any trail drives without them.
No, absolutely not. In fact, in my book, the part I talk about, the trail drive, there's two African-American boys on this trail drive.
I wonder why and who decided that they were going to diminish him. I mean, there had to be some kind of a concentrated effort.
Yeah, somehow, you know, racism, whatever you want to call it.
But you would think that the mountain men and the associates of the mountain men, the trappers that owned the businesses and everything else, would have kept the story intact, wouldn't you?
Well, you think about cattle drives. You think about the cowboys. The color of a person's skin, whether they were Hispanic or African American, it didn't matter. If you could ride a horse and you were good with the rope and knew what you were doing, it didn't matter what color your skin was.
That's the way it should be.
Exactly. So, you know, despite over a century of kind of obscurity, Jim Beckwith's accomplishments still live on through storytellers and scholars like this Edward Wallace and others who are trying to keep this alive.
Now, is he still alive today?
You know, I didn't have a chance to look that up, but I think that he is, because this article isn't that old.
I see.
So, but his achievements are being recognized more and more in various museums, including El Pueblo History Museum and Fort Vasquez, as are the accomplishments of other African-American individuals and communities throughout history.
I wonder if that El Pueblo refers to actually today Pueblo, Colorado.
It could be. But it says, and I think it's new or fairly recent, the El Pueblo History Museum.
I see.
But, you know, today Jim Beckwith's memoirs are still in print. You can still find them. They remain an interesting and valuable historical document, providing a detailed and unique source of social history, a look into both Native American and early United States society from the point of view of an individual as an African American man and a freed slave.
I have somewhere in my possession, in one of my history books, cowboy history books, whatever, a picture of Jim Beckwith.
Yeah, when I did this story, I there was a picture, but I couldn't print it out.
He was a big man, I think.
Yeah, it didn't say, but yeah.
But, you know, and I really appreciate your having that story on the air, because it's a shame that because of his color of his skin that he was diminished into basically nothing.
Well, put in the background.
Yeah.
You know, and grateful for guys like this Edward Wallace.
Absolutely.
And there's other, you know, quite a few others that are bringing forth the contributions of, you know, the Mexicans, the Hispanics, the Indians, and the African Americans, and all they did in the history of the American West.
Absolutely. Great story.
Thank
you. Appreciate that.